Parsha Mishpatim, we have different laws that are connected with the Jewish people in general and with judges in particular. In chapter 23, Perek Kaf Gimel, it says, "Do not pervert the judgment of your destitute person in his grievance. Distance yourself from a false word. Do not execute the innocent or the righteous, for I shall not exonerate the wicked." And then we have the Pasuk, and Pasukhet, "Do not accept a bribe, v'shochad lo tikach, for the bribe will blind those who see and corrupt words that are just." And here we have the idea, which the Agel Levav brings down in source number 2, that even if you're going to be taking a bribe, ladun din emet, to judge a fair judgment, right? It's not going to change the decision. You're going to judge a fair judgment. Even still, it's usur to take a bribe. You're not allowed to take a bribe. And the rabbis explain that perhaps in this case, you're right, it's not going to affect you, but taking a bribe in itself, in its own right, affects a person. And in future cases, you will be affected in your decisions that you make. And then Gion Levav continues on a more philosophical level, and he says, based on the Zohar HaKadosh, that Parsha Mishpatim is referred to as the Parsha of Gilgulim, the Parsha of the reincarnation of souls. And then one has to realize that in courts of law, albeit we see in front of us Reuven and Shimon, two individuals, very often the court is based on, and judges aren't even aware of this, that's why the court is referred to as Elokim Nitzav Badakel, that Hashem Kivyachol is found in the court of a judgment, that those who are exonerated and those who are punished are really replaying oftentimes previous incarnations, that this one owed this one money, etc. So therefore you have to be very careful not to take any bribes, not to in any way misuse the justice system or try to abuse the justice system, because there's a lot more going on here than just these two individuals that are standing here. Sometimes it's a judgment of hundreds of years before that are now being played out in our time. And we understand as well, as the Menachem Sion and Drash Mordechai point out, that when one takes a bribe, it doesn't only affect the judge who takes the bribe, but rather Mitzalev Divrei Tzadikim, the words of the righteous. Who are the righteous? The other judges. That if one judge is biased, then he is going to therefore very likely have an impact on the other judges as well, and the entire court is abused. The entire court system is abused. This idea of do not accept a bribe is pretty simple to understand. As the Chochmah HaMatzvun quotes here the idea in source number 5 from the Or HaTzafon, this idea is quoted by a lot of the Musar Sfarim, that Mahi Shochad, the Gemara asks, what is the idea of Shochad? Shochad, it's one-sided. Zot Amerit Shepasul HaShochad Yisodo B'Koch Psychologia Tavua B'Nefesh Adam, that shochad is really a deep part of a psychological aspect of a person, that when a person receives any type of gift or any type of favor, then you're more likely to be inclined to their view, even if it makes no sense. That's human nature. Human nature is when someone does you a favor, so that you see things from their vantage point, you understand things from the way they look at it, and you've lost that ability to be impartial, that ability to judge a situation in the way that we need to do it. And you see this, says the Or HaTzafon, in two classic cases. One case is that of a melech. The halacha is she'ein lo shivi melech b'ibur shana. Pasul hu liyot dayan b'ibur shana mipteishu nogea b'davar. You're not allowed to make a king in a leap year because he's nogea b'davar. And the different understandings of this, but one understanding is that the king would use tax money to pay for his soldiers month by month. But if there was an Ibur Shana, if there was a leap year, so then that extra month he'd have to pay from his own treasury. And therefore he wouldn't want that. So we wouldn't want to have a leap year. Likewise in Source 7, the Kohen Gadol, who was, you know, Kadosh Mirechem, he was holy from birth. These are individuals who are, you know, the king had a sacred Torah with them at all times. We wouldn't, you know, think that the king is involved in this with his own impartiality. But this is the power of Shochat. And continue there, Daniel quotes here at Safon in 7, that a Kohen also can't be appointed in a year of an Ibr Shana. Why? Because of the cold, Mishum Sina. What does this mean? That if you have a leap year, so then Yom Kippur comes out later in the Jewish calendar year, comes out more toward the fall time, October time. And even though Eretz Yisrael is pretty warm then, he has to tovel in the mikvah 5 times out in the mikvahs out in the open. And even if they had hot water, it's still a little bit more chilly to go to the mikvah in October than in September time. So the Kohen Gadol, again, the Kohen Gadol, the greatest of all people, nevertheless, we're afraid that he may have a Negiah Badavar. He's saying, you know, oh my, it's going to be a leap year this year. I have to go into the mikvah in a month later, which is cold. Ah, we don't need a leap year. And he may, again, he would be not impartial to creating a leap year. And as Rav Muk notes in source number 9, Rashi comments that a bribe can even corrupt a Torah scholar, for if he accepts the bribe, his mind will lapse into confusion, his learning will be forgotten, his eyes will lose their brightness. Elsewhere, Rashi notes that it is impossible not to be influenced in favor of someone who gave you a gift. Our sages extend this prohibition to accepting verbal expressions of gratitude, gestures, and minor services, which can have a corrupting influence. Of course, accepting a monetary bribe is more serious, since it's usually offered in secrecy. And there are many, 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 many stories in the Gemara where a person will take a feather off the rabbi's jacket. He says, I can't judge your case. You did me a favor. You removed the feather from my jacket. Somebody else helps the rabbi cross the bridge. He says, I can't judge your case. You did a favor for me. You lent me a hand to cross the bridge. All of these cases are cases where they seem to be not even a bribe. It's not like you're giving money. You're doing a casual favor for somebody. Nevertheless, when a person does you a favor, you're more inclined to see them as more of a favorable side, and therefore you cannot judge this judgment in a completely impartial way. And that's the power of Shochat, that's the power of bribery, Shuhuchat. It makes you one-sided, it blinds you in terms of your vision. That, my friends, is the classic way we understand Shochat. It makes a lot of sense. We have to be so careful that a judge should not take any type of bribery whatsoever. Good. Comes along the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish turns this on its head. And from this Chazon Ish, we learn such a gewaltig lesson that's so applicable for our lives and level number one of understanding what Shochat is about. The Chazon Ish is quoted first in the Drash Mordechai, and then we'll see a piece from the Sefer Lav Dechah Be'emes. The Drash Mordechai, Rav Mordechai Druk Zatzal, says the following. He quotes here the idea that Mashrish Rabbeinu Mitamidav Hu Inyan Emunas Chacham. One of the things the Chazon Ish was very careful about was to inculcate and instill in his students the idea of Emunas Chachamim, believing in the power of the rabbis. Vashkein v'arev ha'yachuzer b'chol derech ha'fshari l'abdeinu b'seh orchon chayim v'yod rabbeinu magil mikra zeh ya bo'er b'eish l'hava b'divrei Chazon Ish. And he says his rabbi, when he would come to this piece about Noti Kach Shochat, would be on fire in terms of what the Chazon Ish noted on this pasuk in his Sefer Emunah Ubitachon. And this is the idea. He says, Yesh Od, quoting the Chazon Ish in the asterisk in 10, Ra'ag Chola, Asher Yetzi Yilafet Ba Lahani Emunah Chachamim Leiv B'nei Adam. There is something that tries to divert people from believing in Emunah Chachamim. V'hu Mishkal HaMirmah Shal Negiah, and that's when people say that the Chachamim have a Negiah B'davar. Chovat ha-tamid la'amin ki ein nigiyah ba'olam ba'alat koach la'tot leiv chacham la'veit mishpat. We have to believe that there's no nigiyah, there's no personal, you know, vendetta or personal thing that a Talmid Chacham has that's going to skew the veracity of anything, any idea. Ki megamat ha-chacham lizkot nafsho v'litgael be'ez ha-shma yichav lo nafsho yoter mikol makal petza. Talmid Chacham's whole essence is truth. Talmid Chacham's whole vision is to be able to see things with clarity. So to say that a Talmid Chacham has a personal interest in and a vested interest in, and therefore they're deciding in favor of or against, that is heresy. That is against what Yiddishkeit is about. The Talmidei Chachamim are way beyond personal views. And we have to understand that. Because if you would hold like this, continuing in 10, then lo yechayev et nafsho lishmo elav achrei shimsal liklod et arato beitz nekiyah. So you could always say, you know, why should I listen to this Talmid Chacham? You know, he only said this because of A, B, and C. And then the whole system is just thrown out the window. And therefore he says, so how do we understand the idea that the Chumash tells us not to take shochat? Continuing at 12. V'omnam ha-shochad inyan miyuchad v'hu ki mekach shochad hu menin geniyot b'muchlad shatarat tiyavto u'bikvo b'sod kochor ha-nefesh laver ne'chachamim v'yisalef mishpat. The shochad is something that a Kodesh Baruch Hu introduced in this world. And the way he describes it is huzman koach tuma b'shochad l'tamteim ha-lev l'radeim et ha-bina l'ani'am b'fi ha-dayan l'zkod ha-mishchadom. That shochad is some type of impurity that descends upon the chacham, upon the shofet, upon the leader, that he no longer has clarity, that he lost that ability, innate clarity that he has. And he says here, and this is the key, he says that this loss of clarity affects that promise that Hashem made that this person would not be affected by negative thoughts. Im yavura mashis hira Torah v'yesheva kisei mishpat b'nigud l'mitzvah haTorah. If you take shochah, which is against Torah, then this is going to be the effect it's going to have. V'hine, and this is the key in the asterisks in 12. Ein hazarat hashochah michlal hamishpatim. Shochad, taking shochad is not a mishpat, something I understand. It's not, of course he took shochad, that's why he's nogeya to one side, he's in favor of one side. That's logical. Shochad has nothing to do with logic, it's a chok. It's something beyond our understanding. Shochad affects a person in a way that we can't even begin to fathom. Don't look at shochad as A leads to B and therefore I have outcome C. No! Shochad is not about something we understand because our chachamim are above these, smallness, so to speak. Shochad is a chok that's embedded in the Torah that you take shochad. It's not a natural consequence, it's a spiritual consequence that you have lost the ability to have the clarity that you need. And how do we see this? Because we see that in many cases where a person has a personal investment, the Torah allows you to make these decisions. For example, chametz. That, that there's going to be a tremendous loss. So there you have the ability to decide how to handle it. V'hu moreba chametz shalav avar lav ha-pesach af b'ruchush gadol. Yet chametz has left over Pesach, you didn't sell it. What should you do? You're able to make this decision. It's a lot of money at stake. Aren't you going to be biased to your own money? No. Because the Torah understands that chachamim are above their own personal bias and above their own personal amount of money. In a mishpat, lo pasla Torah rak b'shochat shebizman ha-mishpat. Avaloz rak Torah lishpot et ovov et sodo. The Torah allows the shofet to judge his friend or to judge his enemy. Because the Torah understands. And this is what we need to understand, my friends. And this is Chiddush number one for today on level one. The godless of Talmidei Chachamim is that it's not a natural process. That Talmid Chacham is way above these biases. In the language of the Chabad Emes, Hinei Chovat HaTalmid Lamin Ki Ein Nigia Bolam Bala Koach Latot Leib Chacham Lavei Mishpat. There's nothing natural in this world that's going to turn a Talmid Chacham from judging properly. This is something that is found in the spiritual aspects of this world. Ki Ein Nigia in 14... In the arrow, ba'olam ba'alakorach lato lev chacham lavet mishpat. There is nothing in this world that could push a chacham off, except for this is something that is beyond our understanding. This is a chok. This is the way Hashem embedded in this world. Lo tikach shochad ki ashochad yaver nei pikhim. The shochad blinds you. Had the Torah not said this, then we wouldn't even think to have such a law, because it's not about a natural process. The upshot of the Chazon Ish is in the bracket in 12, and that is to understand that it's a chacham v'amet tamin ner l'raglo v'or l'tivato v'sidko yashuv mishpat, that there's always a light of clarity, a light of directed from above, when a shofet, when a Talmid Chacham is making a decision. And therefore we have to have this understanding that this is not a natural process, that the Torah, Chazal, give a tremendous amount of faith in the Talmid Chachamim, and the whole idea of Shochad is not something that we understand naturally, but it's a total chok, a law we don't understand. Mashma from this, my friends, is what we see from this, is how we have to view Talmidei Chachamim, how we have to view Emunas Chachamim, that we can't look at our sages as people who are biased by things down here in this world, but we have to see them almost above life. Moshe, Moshe Scheinerman, Shlita, in 15, he quotes the Chasam Sofer, Ki ne'ikar Emunas Omen b'Torah Hashem hi'aminu b'chochmah. To believe in the Torah of Hashem is to believe in the scholars. Dor, dor, v'dor, shab. Every generation, that Hashem will never leave the judges in any generation. The Sefer Michtam Eliyahu, Chelek Aleph, in Source 16, speaks about how he had, Rav Dessler, Zachiti Ladad Panim, I was able to see face to face the Gedolim of his generation, Rav Chaim Ibrisk, the Rav Chaim Osir Gajunsky, the Chavetz Chaim. And he says, I can tell you, Ne'amana, to see them, you see how small we are. To see them is to see people who felt the achrayos, the responsibility of Klal Yisrael on their shoulders. To see them is to see what greatness in Torah is all about. And he says, if you've been with them, the Chiruach HaKodesh 17, Sharta v'chavruta, mamash ra'ui lomar ha'mavdil ben kodesh l'chol, ha'avdil sheben asifutehem leben asifot shanu megulim b'hem. To see them and to see them interact is mamish say, la'avdil ben kodesh l'chol, they are kodesh, and we are so chol. This is Rav Dessler, nonetheless, speaking. And this is the aspect of bittul, the aspect of the ability to nullify ourselves based on what they say. Chisaron ha'karat ha'itbadlu l'umat rabotenu zo shorish kol chata'at v'tchilat kol chorban. Not to be able to mevata, to be nullify our will to their knowledge, it's the beginning of all destruction. And this is our challenge. Our challenge, as the Chazon Ish writes in 18, is that, you know, in areas of Isser v'heter, you know, I drop my milchit spoon in my chalet. Now, what should I do? Is my chalet okay? Is my spoon okay? Is my pot okay? I call up the rabbi and I say, help, right? I'm in a big chalet. What should I do? And he gives you a solution, right? Depending on the situation. So those things I understand, right? I have a situation of you know, mutter, usser, isser v'heter, I ask a rabbi. Ah, but what about shukachayim? What about making decisions in one's life? What about decisions in Chosha Mishpat, in my business world? What about decisions in should I take X path or Y path when it has so many halachic implications to it? And here people say, no, hold on a second, this I can figure out myself, you know? How many times do people go, just like they go to Dr. Google, they go to Rabbi Google? You know, I can pass it for myself. Why do I need to bother a rabbi? And here is where we make a tremendous mistake. because all of this has to be understood, that Rabbanim, rabbis, are not just like scholars, or like in medicine or in other areas, or great psychologists. As great as those people are, the wisdom is coming from other human beings. It's coming from books. The scholar's wisdom is coming from Torah's Chaim. It's coming from a Torah of life. It's coming from Kivyachol Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. And therefore, their advice, therefore, their ability to look at a situation is coming from an entirely different perspective. So obviously you need to go to the doctors, you need to go to the psychologist, but then you need to have Amunas Chachamim. You need to go to a Rav and say, these are the Nitunim, these are the different aspects. Help me. Guide me. What does Torah tell me I should do in this particular situation? And because, after all, Be'er Dvarav Hu in the squiggly in 18, Shekol Chochmo Pri Sechel Nushi, Hashirat Od Matsui Ba, regular wisdom is based on human beings which make mistakes. We're fathomable. Rakel Torah Hi Ha'emes Lamisa, Vashir Dvar Hashem Min HaShemayim. And therefore, Tamad Chacham, Asher Sha'av Kochach Matome Be'er HaTorah Hashem Min HaShemayim. Therefore, Tamad Chacham will get its entire wisdom from Torah. You have to give Imun Bo Kichacham Yisrael Sherko Makorach Makotom HaShemayim. As if he's receiving everything from heaven. Rav Gifter echoes this. That Psalm 20, where he says, what fools are the people who stand in the presence of a Torah scroll, but do not stand in the presence of a Torah scholar? Torah can exist among the Jewish people only to the extent that the nation is capable of evaluating the Torah scholar, the Talmid Chacham, whose very personality represents a Torah presence. That, my friends, is probably the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful definitions of what Torah scholar is about. His personality represents a Torah presence. When it remains frozen in print, Torah can be lifeless and forlorn, God forbid. It lives only in the Jew whose soul is molded according to the Torah's rule and principles. The Torah is unlimited in her depth and breadth, but she also must have those who will strive to draw her life-giving waters and will discover her wellsprings. The Talmid Chacham is the one who always uncovers new Torah horizons. In such a manner, the impression is instilled that the Torah is not a sealed, limited presence. Rather, the very process of the giving of the Torah included the endless striving to bring it ever increasingly closer to human recognition. Consequently, the Torah is a constant continuation of the giving of the Torah from Har Sinai. And that's how we have to understand it. We have to understand that if one wishes to master Torah wisdom, he must approach it according to the nature of the Torah wisdom as a revelation of the divine will. And in this respect, in 22, when we perceive the Talmid Chacham as the one who upholds the continual universal phenomena of the revelation at Sinai, one in whom the divine will is revealed to the Jewish nation, then we cannot fail to understand when the Torah commands, Et Hashem Elokecha Tirah, you are to fear Hashem your God, then Et, the Et is L'Rabot Talmidei Chachamim. The word Et comes to add Torah scholars to the category of reverence for God. When we look at Torah scholars, it's not like, oh, they're a human being, I'm a human being, and they have a thought, and I have a thought. No, these are people who are mamish, the live emissaries of the will of God. They are the ones who are transmitting, as if Torah Moshe Mitzinai through them, what the Torah has to say. And we have to give them that respect, like we stand up in front of a Sefer Torah, we have to stand up in front of these rabbis, and we have to have that belief that whatever they tell us, is Emos Lamisa, is the truth. And hence, the Torah tells us in 23, Emunos Chachamim means, Orim Lechal Yamin Shu Smol Val Smol Shul Yamin. If they tell you you're right, it's your left, and your left is your right, you have to listen to them. The Torah leaders of every generation are these leaders, wherever they are, whoever they are. Yiftach B'daro Kishmul B'daro. It doesn't say, well, if I only lived in the generation that you have, the leaders that you have, you have to listen to them. Without Emunas Chachamim, faith is lacking in 23 asterisks in the principle of all principles in Hashem Yisparach himself. Without Emunas Chachamim, the entire concept of Torah's meaning is lacking to us. What remains is the conception of Torah is devoid of the revelation at Sinai. And that is what we need to understand. So my friends, on idea level number one, what we're seeing here is something very profound. when we look at it on a very superficial level, we say, Lo tikach shochad, you can't take bribes. And I understand that I can't take bribes because bribes impact me, bribes affect me. It's a mishpat, it's a law, I understand. Comes along the Chazon Ish and turns it on its head. It's nothing about what you understand. These scholars are above bribery. They're above their personal negiyos. A scholar doesn't think about what's in it for me. A scholar is so beyond that world. He's like in a different league than everybody else. Why isn't he allowed to take shochad? I don't know. That's the tumah, that's the impurity that the Torah set up in its system. Had the Torah not told me this, then bribery would have had no effect on the Torah scholar. The only reason it has an effect on the Torah scholar is because that's the way Hashem embedded it in the world. And that's a koach atuma. It's not a natural force. It's a supernatural force. It's a spiritual force. It's a otherworldly force that impacts the person and how they view the situation. Mashma from this, from here we see the greatness of our Talmidei Chachamim, the greatness of our Torah scholars, and how we have to mamish be able to have that kfifa, the ability to humble ourselves, the ability to put ourselves in the right position to listen to our scholars, to understand what the greatness of our scholars are, and to be able to avail of ourselves of these great people. And when we have situations in life, instead of saying, well, you know, I think I can figure this out myself, you know, I can read the books myself, I can figure out, when we are in a difficult situation, we need to have the clarity of as if, you know, a direct line from Shamayim, and that's what the Emunas Chachamim, the Talmidei Chachamim, are granted. That's idea number one that we learn from our pasuk. Idea number two is Apiderech Musar, that this pasuk is not only referring to judges, it's referring, it doesn't say judges, it's referring to each and every one of us. The Omohel, O Moshe, Rav Scheinerman, 24, Ish hu b'vchinat dayan tmidi kol yimei chayav, to a certain degree, we're judges at every moment of our lives. Kol ma'aseh ish v'ra'anotav, every person and their ideas. Everything we do has to be measured. We have to be careful of shochad in everything that we do. And we have to realize the impact of what shochad has on us. And when you look at this way of understanding, he says, the last paragraph in 24, we see how we live our lives where we live lie upon lie, and we have to then justify the first lie, and our whole lives are corrupted. Rav Zaitchik in Or Chadash says this so beautifully. He says, when you have a city of sinners, so you go to a judge, and the judge judges. But what happens when the judge is himself corrupt? There's no one to go to. When people are sick, you go to a doctor. But what happens if the doctor is sick? Then there's no one to go to. He says, likewise, when a person does an aveira, a person does a sin, then you do tshuva. But what happens if your seichel, if your mind has so corrupted, then you don't even realize you sin. Then how can you do tshuva? And then you're up a creek, like in all the other cases. Adam Sirich Lefachay Lo Rach Min Avaratzma, second paragraph in 25, a person doesn't only have to fear doing a sin, Shul Sel Min Ha'onishev Olaka, and from the sin and the punishment, Elo Od Yoter Yifachay Mima Shavera Mitamtemet Et Lipo. The greatest fear is how sin, and this is one aspect that corrupts us, how sin itself distorts our mindset. Mishabeshet Et Sichlo, and leads us into a way where we're unable to have the clarity of doing tshuva, because we don't even realize that we've sinned. Amru Chazal in 26 in the asterisk, Ashrei Adam Shu Gavo Mipsha'av Lo Psha'av Gavo Mimenu. Praise is the person, the Medrash says of Bereishis Rabba, who's above their sins and whose sins aren't above them. And this is exactly what we're talking about. A person can get so into the world of sin that everything becomes skewed. And then they say to themselves, well, it really wasn't so bad. And, you know, I was allowed to speak Lashon Hara. And you know what? This is really mutter. And I'm allowed to take this money. I know it doesn't really belong to me, but, you know. And then everything becomes perverted. And everything becomes messed up. And I've lost that clarity. Shochad is about that there's one area where I sin. There's something that moves me in a certain direction. And suddenly I've lost the clarity to be able to regain my composure and be able to make the right decisions in life. And this is the challenge of what Shochad is about. How a person, if they don't judge every single action with what they do very carefully, then they start acting in ways that are inappropriate. They don't even realize that they're inappropriate, and then they're so caught off guard, they don't even know how to regain and regroup. As Rabbi Pliskin notes in Growth Through Torah in Parshat Shoftim, he says, this refers to even a small bribe, all the more so to a large one. There is no greater bias than our desire to see ourselves in a positive light. We do not want to see any faults in ourselves, and we want to think that we're all full of virtues. This bias will prevent us from taking an honest look at ourselves and objectively finding our faults and limitations. But self-improvement is the goal of our existence, and because it's so important, we must force ourselves to reject the bribery of our own bias. Make every effort to view yourselves as if you were reviewing the life of a complete stranger about whom you are totally objective. Only when you see where you and who you really are can you grow spiritually, improve your character traits. And this is really one of the greatest challenges that we have. What are we biased towards? We're biased towards ourselves. So when I take a look at myself, I say, okay, time to do tshuva. Okay, let's take a look at the things I've done wrong. And what happened? Because I love myself, and I don't want to see myself as someone who's done anything wrong. So then I start to rationalize, well, that really wasn't so bad. You know what? My friend has done much worse. Trust me. Now, compared to the two, oh my gosh, like, you think I have to do tshuva for that? Boy, do they have to do tshuva for what they did. But me? Okay, it wasn't great, but it wasn't really bad. So, okay, that one doesn't count. And look at this. Yeah, you know what? There are shitas that say, and, you know, dina d'machusa dina, I know that, but, yeah, that's not to worry about. And I go through my life, and I can rationalize almost everything I've done. And then I look at myself, because I'm biased to myself. I am my own bride, so to speak. And I say, well, you know what? I'm doing pretty good. I don't really think I've done much too for here. And that's a problem. Because there's a lot wrong. And if I would step out of myself and I would look at it objectively, okay, it's nothing to do with you. You smiles, you're perfect. Okay, good, I know that. Okay, now look at you as if you were somebody else, right? You're stepping out of yourself because you're perfect, right? Good, we got that one. Now, if you were somebody else looking at you, not you, because you're perfect, how would they view you? And try to be able to see it in a much more rational, detached way. And suddenly you say, well, you really can't argue that. Yeah, they may have done much worse, but that was still pretty bad. Like, you know what? A school spade a spade. And then be able to step out of the personal bias of love of self and be able to have that clarity of being able to do the tshuva, to be able to do the work that is necessary. Rabbi Pliskin here quotes the Shem Shmuel 29, that there's a major difference between a person who is blind and a person who is prejudiced because of some bias. When a person is blind, he realizes it and will ask someone who can see to help him. But if a person has a bias, the bias blinds him to such an extent he's not even realized he's blind. He feels that what he perceives is reality and will refuse to listen to others. There are many types of bribes that distort our judgment. We're not referred to out-and-out bribe. Any bias will cause us to view things in a way that will fit our particular bias. Especially true when someone tries to point out our mistakes and fault. We all want to feel that we're correct. Awareness of our own blindness is the first step in overcoming it. When someone tells you something that goes against your bias, weigh the matter very carefully. Recognize that bias blinds. Just because you do not immediately recognize a fault does not mean that you do not have it. If necessary, consult a few other people. Now, my friends, let's discuss here one of the greatest bribery of all time, 30. Where Daniel, Rav Daniel Ochian, V'arei lo mitoshel davar, kol ish v'ishu b'chinat dayan t'midi kol yimei chayav, כי כל מעשה אדם, כל רעיונותיו ומחשבות ליבו, כל תנועה גופו ונפשו, הבאים מתוך בחירתו, all of our actions, all of our thoughts, everything we say, come from our free choice. In all areas of our life, כולם תלויים הם בשיקול דעת והכרעת שכלו, לשמור עליהם ולהכריע. עד כמה הם מתאימים הם למסלול? How are they ha'chayim ha'mutarot al-pi tarat Hashem? How much of them is really what Hashem wants? And that this is makor ha'emet v'tzedek. Everything that we have to do, we have to weigh to make sure that this is exactly what Hashem wants. What gets in our way? And the answer is very simple. There's a lot of things that get in our way. But one of them is taifa. One of them is desire. If I want to do something, or I am biased toward a certain aspect, so I'm going to be drawn to that aspect, whether consciously or subconsciously, and I've lost that ability to step out and see what's really correct in this situation. And this, my friends, happens in so many areas of our lives. And it happens, hadaya meshuchedet poela badam shelo b'yedeto v'shelo b'dato. It happens without even realizing it. ומבזו שמעבר לעיני השכל של איש המשוחד עד שאין רואה את השקר והזיוף שבקרבה. You don't even see it as falsehood anymore because you're so set on this and you fall into this trap over and over again. It can happen, let's give a number of practical examples. One example. You have two people that come in front of you for a bid to do work in your house. And you have a bias in your head that tall people are more responsible than short people. That's a juke you have in your head. So the two people come in front of you, and the shorter person is offering you a much more reliable deal. But, right, and it makes much more sense to take him. But what? But you, in your head, you have a juke. Tall people, they're the ones you can rely on. And what happens? You hire the tall person. Did you really weigh out what was the better of the two? No. You made up your mind, and therefore you went in this way. Likewise, there's a certain type of salad dressing, let's say, that used to have a hechsher, and the hechsher was taken off, or put on another hechsher that you usually don't rely on. But, you know, I've been using this hechsher all the time. So they switch hechsher. Like, okay, it's probably some political thing that, you know, someone paid them more money and therefore they switched the hechsher. I need to have this salad dressing because this salad dressing is the key to my magic salad that everybody raves about. So, okay, it's not the hechsher I really like, but, well, come on, you know, it's all political. You know, kashrut is all political, don't you know that? It's not such a big deal. And you buy the salad dressing. Did you weigh this out? That if they change the hechsher, maybe there's ingredients that have changed. Maybe that there's machinery that's changed. Maybe there are other things that have changed. Maybe you should call up your LOR and ask him, can I rely on this? And it's changed hechsherim and I've used it in the past. Or do you just go on your own knowledge? Why don't we weigh it out? Or if we weigh it out, why would we buy that salad dressing? Very simple. Because my reputation of having the great salad dressing is a taifa, it's a desire. It's a desire for kavod, Ephraim raves about my salad. And, you know, and this is the salad dressing that makes the salad. So if this is the salad dressing I need, okay, so it's not 100%. That's a bias. That is what pushes us into a certain direction. And these are decisions. So in the first case, so it's not so bad I hired the taller one over the shorter one. Or this is my next door neighbor's whatever, and therefore, you know, he must be better. Okay, so might not be so terrible. Might not be honest. Might not be really giving the other guy a fair chance. Okay, I can argue it. I can rationalize it. In the second case, this is because my desire for, or I love the taste of, all of these desires are going to weigh in heavier than what the hechsher is, because, you know, it can't be so bad. And when we make decisions like this over and over again in our lives, what we have done is strayed from the path. And this is what the Sfarim are saying one after the other. And this is what the Ordaniels began with. That every single thing we have to ask ourselves, Ad kama matimim heim lemaslul hachayim hamutav, Hamitavel Pitaras Hashem. What is the double up line in 30? What is it? A Pitaras Hashem? What does Hashem want from me in this situation? To be able to weigh it out and ask myself, what is the correct order in this situation?
And it affects everything in our lives. And we have to be first and foremost ready to be cognizant of this trap. How we're negative to ourselves, our desires, our biases, what we like, what we think, what we hold by, has just perverted our sense of right and justice and what Ritzon Hashem is, what the will of Hashem is in every single case. Living a life of not taking shochad, and we call this year bias, beware, is to walk around with that sign wherever you are. What are our biases? What are the traps that we fall into? To be able to have that clarity so that we don't make mistake after mistake and then rationalize it, and then it's almost impossible to do tshuva. The example that he gives in 31. We're faced with this truth of reality day in, day out. So let's take the example of smoking. Everyone knows. It's written on the package. Surgeon General warns, right? If you smoke, it could lead to A, B, C, and D. We all know this. And yet, hundreds of people, thousands of people smoke. Well, how could they do this? They know that smoking is dangerous to their health. That is something that's been proven. And yet people still smoke. Why? Because they have a desire to smoke. And that desire to smoke overcomes everything else. It's like people who know that they're not allowed to eat certain foods. But, you know, I like that food. So the bias of liking that food overcomes what is correct, what is right. Rav Freifeld Zatzal, In Search of Greatness, notes, we're living today in a sick world, a world that's completely degenerated and demeaned the human being, a world that says, what fools these mortals be. The whole modern world subscribes to it. It beats us down and drums the most ridiculous foolishness and the most blatant insanities into our heads. It trains us to accept habitual lies without cognizance of what we're doing and strips us of the power to resist. Take, for example, a famous company that manufactures and distributes rotten cigarettes that are unhealthy, destructive little sticks of garbage. That's a great way to describe cigarettes. But the company wants us to buy them, very many of them. The company hires a battery of psychiatrists and spends millions of dollars to figure out how to make us do the self-destructive thing. And they come up with the idea of creating an image associating Marlboro with a cowboy. And again, even though this is one example, it's the entire industry of advertising, and we have to realize that they're playing on us, and we have to be able to ask ourselves, do I really need this thing or not? Let's go on with the Marlboro example. The Marlboro man. So when I go into a store, I will think, I'm a cowboy. I want to be a cowboy on a horse, and so I'll buy Marlboros. What kind of insanity is this? I'm a cowboy? What do I have to do with a cowboy? What do I have to do with a horse? But it doesn't matter. They just bang into everyone's head because they see us all as members of the herd. They'll train and condition us after a while we'll ask for Marlboro. They'll build fantasies in our mind. Fantasies have no connection to reality. They'll make us think we're cowboys. We're both sides. This is a bias that we fall into all the time. And we spend millions of dollars a year on things that we don't need, on things that may even be detrimental to our mental or spiritual health because we're biased, because we're nogei b'davar, because we don't see clearly, because we have been bribed by the society we live in to have a skewed mindset. The Western world is covered with a thick blanket of shkarim, of lies. We breathe in the contaminated air. The next thing we know, the most important thing is to have a car and possessions, to enjoy material experiences. We lose sight of the inner light of creation, of its essence, its meaning, its boundless depth. But if you could only swing the pendulum the other way, to the other extreme, if we would see the covenant of the Almighty in everything, if we would feel the pressure of the divine in everything, the world would appear entirely different. Raposa, this is in every aspect of our lives. Of course we want to have nice things. Of course we want to go to the greatest and best, fanciest, you know, hotel for. But at what price? At what physical price? At what spiritual price? What effect does it have on us? What effect does it have on our family? Things have to be weighed out. That doesn't mean you don't go in the end. But it means you've at least made that decision. It means at least you've asked advice. At least you've been able to step outside of self and what you desire to be able to see what's best. You know, I just had this recently. A student came to me with the following question. She says that her family is divided. Many families are in terms of the religious spectrum. And her siblings are more to the left. Her parents are more to the right. And every year they go away for Pesach. some years the parents choose the place, and some years the siblings choose the place. She's the youngest of many. She said, well, this year the siblings became the majority, and they have the stronger vote, and they've chosen a place to go to for Pesach. And she says, I know this particular place is, even though she said to me, clearly the standards of kashrut are fine, my parents won't go to a place that wasn't. But she says, you know, the environment is not a Pesach environment, you know. I don't need to be more descriptive. I think you can fill in the blanks. But obviously, she didn't mention the name of the place. It's really irrelevant. And she's studying in Eretz Yisrael for the year, and she wanted to know, she says, should I join my family in this Pesach environment, when, you know, I've been submerged in the Israel experience, the seminary experience? Is this where I want to be? But I really want to be with my family, but I really want to have a Pesach experience. What should I do? So here's a girl who understands that she really wants to be with her family, and that desire to be with her family is going to be an overarching desire that she can't see beyond anything else. But she has the ability, and this is the greatness that we need to injected ourselves. She said, well, maybe I can go before Pesach. My parents are willing that I can spend 2 weeks, because we're from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, to be with my family and to see them, and then come back to Eretz Yisrael for Pesach, and that way have the best of both worlds. And she asked me, is that the best of the solution? And we were discussing what to do. It's irrelevant, even though curiosity always overcomes us, what the final outcome of the question was, but that's not for our point today. But the question to be asked is the greatness, because she knows she has a bias. Her bias is she wants to be with her family. On the other hand, she realizes that spiritually this is not going to be the best place for her. This is a young lady who's able to step out of her personal bias, bias beware, and say, whoa, what am I getting myself into? And again, there was rationalizations. I have a very firm brother and sister-in-law be there, and I can hang out with them, and I don't have to be with everyone else, we all know what it's like. We rationalize this, and we rationalize that, and I said to her, and a pretty young lady in a hotel full of, you know, good-looking young men, and you can stay in your room the entire time, and you won't have to see anybody, and we know the whole picture. And these are the questions that come up, and these are the honest questions that come up. And my friends, that's why this pasuk is real life. This is where it's at. That lo tikach shochad, don't accept rivalry. So right, on the first level, it's about amunos hachamim, believing in our sages. On the second level, lo tikach shochad, is for me and you. Because shochad blinds us. And when I'm blinded, I don't see clearly. All I see is what I want. And I've convinced myself what I want is what I need to get, because that's what I want. And that's the right thing to get. And we've lost clarity. And I'll tell you where else we've lost clarity. The Siach Mordechai, source 33, points out the following. Ha-shochad, shochad ha-chayim, the bribery of life. Ha-taivo shochay elam hazeh, the desires of this world. Mashkichot min hadam et ha-ti lavo, makes you forget the future, makes you forget the accounting. And it doesn't allow us to do tshuva because we don't think we've done anything wrong. It's convoluted everything. Just like physical money blinds the eyes of the person, so too the bribery, the desires of life blind a person. The tanugot ba'olam ha'cholef, the pleasures of this passing world, don't enable us to see the truth of what this is about. That there's going to be v'lav yeli tengdin v'cheshbon lifnei shofet kol haaretz. There's going to be din v'cheshbon, an accounting for every single pleasure we had in this world, for every single action and thought we had. It's going to be an accounting of why we did this. What was our mindset? Do we think it through? Our desire to, you know, live up this world to the fullest makes us blinded to the fact that we're going to die one day and that we have an accounting to give and that our neshama has to go back up pure to heaven. 34, we're the judge for ourselves. And Ask yourself before you do something, is this the correct or not?
But
then the question becomes, well, if you want me to make these decisions, how can I be able to be sure that I'm making right decisions when I'm so blinded and so bright that my brain is so twisted? How do I know that I am making these right decisions? And this last question that I'd like to answer in two ways, very briefly. How can we make these right decisions? So the answer that Sichas Mordechai gives is, you're right, we have two sides to us. We have the physical side, which is our desires, but we also have the Seichel, the Ora Neshama, the spiritual side of us. Tafkido Seichel Lachwiya Tachomer V'Lachniyo. And our job is to have our higher self be able to rule over our lower self. And it's a Melchama Kashama, or it's a very, very, very difficult war. How can we withstand this battle? How can we be able to overcome our desires for the physical world? Allah Dam in the Dad in 34, Lichasek Bemunah. We have to work on Emunah. We have to work on God consciousness in our lives at every single moment. We have to remind ourselves 24/7. Ki Aleph, the first of everything is Emunah. V'chenatafi Emunah. Aleph to Taf, the beginning and end. It's about awareness of Hashem. The more we put Hashem's presence in our lives, as this is the sole reality, this is why I'm here, for this God created me to be a servant, a loyal servant of Hashem, that has to be constantly drummed in and spoken about all the time in my mind. And as Rav Yisrael Salomon brings down an idea we've seen before, brings down the idea of Rav Chanan Wasserman in his Kolos Mamarim on Emunah. He says that we know that a child, Bar Bat Mitzvah, is obligated in Emunah. And the Rambam notes that the great Aristotle had problems with Emunah. So if the great Aristotle had problems with Emunah, how can we expect that a Bar or Bar Mitzvah boy knows Emunah? And he says the answer to that question is found in another question, which is the Pasuk says, do not stray after your eyes or your heart. And the Gemara says, what is after your heart? It's against Minos, heresy. But heresy is false ideology. In 36 in the squiggly, it's an intellectual transgression. Why does the Torah speak about after your hearts? It should have said after your brains or after your intellect. What's the connection between heresy and the heart? Rav Chanan famously answered, the root of heresy is emotional rather than intellectual. Belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam is the most natural thing, the end of 36 in the world. It is inconceivable that all the incredible things in creation came to be without a creator. Now, everyone believes. Ah, why don't we see people who say they believe? Why is it Lo Tetorach Relevavchem V'Chreinechem? 37, a heretic, however, is someone who wants to live his life without anyone telling him what to do. So he construes all kinds of questions and arguments in order to deny the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But it's not his intellect that's denying it. It's his character and emotions. That's why the Torah tells us not to follow our hearts. It's the desire of the heart that leads to heresy. And that's why it's so important to teach children about Emunah from a very young age. Rabbi Sishyahu says repeatedly in 37, Sefer on Emunah, intellectual conviction is not the issue, rather the lack of internalizing what is inherently known. We must internalize the Emunah that is ingrained deep within every Jew and obscure for purposes of free choice. In today's mixed-up world, many children who come from homes do not absorb Emunah in the ideal manner, perhaps because their parents are victims of the materialistic culture surrounding them. These children may lose some of the innate purity necessary to be naturally instilled with true Emunah and will require extreme intervention to awaken the obscured Pintala Yid. But for those who were brought up with this Emunah, it's the most natural thing. Additionally, in 40, the eighth hour does not entice man with logical arguments against Emunah. Its power is portraying the material, physical world as real life. Logic alone cannot combat it. Although it may fully cognizant what is wrong and why, we can still perceive something wrong as right because of its material appeal. What we need to work on, answer number one, how do we overcome the desire, is to be ready to accept the Torah way of life. to be able to understand that that has to be emunah, faith, first and foremost. Because otherwise, we can be able to rationalize anything. And the reason why people don't believe or people don't do, it's not because they have an intellectual problem with God. It's desire. And desire blinds us. And desire is our bias. And desire is our bribe. And we have to realize that. And when I take that salad dressing, and the salad dressing obviously is a catchphrase for so many things that we allow ourselves to do that have a question mark on them. We have to step back and say, what is Ratzon Hashem? If I really believe that I'm going to have an accounting for everything in this world, and I'm responsible for everything in this world, then, like this young lady, what is the best approach for me to do? To be able to stand back and be able to bring, what does Hashem want from me in this particular situation? So aspect number one, and it's a battle, and everyone's going to say, agree it's a battle, is emunah. Is this awareness of Hashem continually in my life, that this is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tami? I put Hashem in front of me at all times. That's a mantra that I go by, and that has to overcome my desire. I just had that in the store today. There was something I wanted to buy. It used to have an OU on it, and it doesn't, and it has a Hechsher, an Israeli Hechsher that we don't hold by. So part of me said, you know, it used to have an OU, and I said, no, right? She was very helpful for me. I'm not buying it, even though I want it, and it's good, and that. No. If it's not, it's not. And step out of your own desires. And you know, you stand in the store, and you have this conversation with yourself. And since everyone's on their Bluetooth anyway, talking to themselves, it didn't look so strange that I spoke to myself this morning. Final idea, which will bring us back full circle, 41. When Adam was created, good and evil were clearly defined. After he sinned by eating from the Eitz Hadas, evil entered his body and became part of his spiritual makeup, which made it much more difficult for him to distinguish between good and evil. Fortunately, as we will see, this confusion is a malady that is limited to the heart. The Chumash of Avos tells us in Avodas HaElokim, chapter 5, that our intellect does not suffer from this confusion. Moreover, it's clear from his words that the intellect is a tool we were given to navigate our way through this world without crashing to roadblocks of evil that were erected after Adam sinned. One is to acknowledge Hashem by way of the intellect. What brings a person to this acknowledgement is clarity of the fact that Hashem implanted in the intellect the ability to recognize the praiseworthiness of truth, the deceit of falsehood, and the value of choosing good and refraining from evil. Wow, we have a conscience. Isn't that great? The intellect's ability to guide a person in 42 can be hijacked, however. Oh, not so good. This potential pitfall is spelled out in this week's parasha. Do not accept a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise. The Gemara explains the word shochad is actually a compound word, shehucha, that he is one. A judge who accepts a bribe becomes one with the person who offered the bribe and consequently does not have the ability to evaluate the situation objectively. When a person's hand accepts a bribe, his intellect becomes paralyzed. But a bribe does not have to take the form of money being transferred from hand to hand. Our heart's desires are one of the biggest bribes that can be offered to us. These two can cause our hearts and minds to become one and prevent the intellect from being able to accurately assess the situation. And this is a beautiful imagery in the Don in 42. Our intellect can be compared to a compass. The needle of the compass always points to the north. But if you place a small magnet next to the compass, it will throw off its ability to point in the right direction. Likewise, when we place a small desire next to our intellect, it throws off our ability to point in the right direction and hinders our capability to navigate life successfully. So what are you supposed to do? How can we know that what our intellect tells us is really true? The answer to this question can also be found in Chovos Levavos, chapter 3. It was for this reason we were given the Torah, which is the ultimate compass. It was given to us by the Creator and therefore is certainly not adulterated by human desires. He who created the maze also gave us the guide to find our way through it. Even if we ourselves have not succeeded in mastering the Torah's guide for living, we always have our Torah leaders who are happy to show us the way. And that, my friends, is really the upshot of do not accept a bribe. V'shochad lo tikach. You want to know the real essence of what we learned from this pasuk on level 1 and level 2? It's emunas chachamim. On level 1, of course a leader would never accept a bribe. It makes absolutely no sense or above that. It's a chok. It's something we don't understand. It's something in the spiritual world. It's metame. It purifies. We don't understand it. On the second level, we ourselves are bribed.
we ourselves, by our desires, by what we want, our biases. We have certain biases towards certain types of people and certain types of things, and we won't involve ourselves in, even if it makes so much sense, because we have these shtiyot. And we have our own desire. I want to eat. I want to go to, it's not really that, you really shouldn't watch it. I know people who do it. It's not so bad. We have our own biases. We've convinced ourselves of everything. Recognize that Hashem gave us a compass that always goes to the north. It goes, the conscious that goes to the will of Hashem. And if we're able to have emunah, that's one aspect that enables us to hold strong. But that magnetic pull that pulls us to our desires is also very strong. And sometimes emunah alone is not enough. What do we need to do? We need to be able to ask. We need to be able to have that objectivity to go and ask. Das Torah, a person who is steeped in Torah, be able to ask them, am I making the right choice here? Am I totally biased here? Where am I holding here? And this is the beauty of Torah, living a Torah lifestyle, which is unbiased, unadulterated. This is what Ritzon Hashem is, to be able to tap into a Torah lifestyle, to tap into Emunah, to tap into Talmidei Chachamim, the Emunas Chachamim. These are all ways to help us redirect that compass northward, redirect that compass in the straightward path. And when we live a life like this, we'll be much more aware and cognizant of all of these biases, and we'll be able to say, bias beware, to ourselves, and be able to make the right choice, the choice that will enable us to have the clarity to maintain a life of connection to God, and not live a life of one sin leading to another, where I don't even know the beginning path of tshuva. May we all be able to have the strength and the ability to allow our consciousness and awareness of Torah to be our guide, and the Emunas Chachamim to live a life directed to the will of God.